Hey, it's Chris. Welcome to the Between Dreams podcast. This is a collection of interesting, fascinating, weird, and inspiring people that I know that are coming together to share stories to amaze you. Today's guest is Jonathan Burns, and he's right here. One of those, at least one of those words described you.
That's right. I assumed we were coming here to make dream catchers together. Is that correct?
Or? Yeah, well, surprisingly, we don't have any.
You should have a dream catcher.
If there was ever a place that should have dream catchers,
that would be capturing dreams. Yeah.
So you are an entertainer, but one that is, I would say, a little bit more challenging to put in a box of the description of what it is that you actually do.
Yeah.
So I would say, like, a lot of my friends and especially guests on this show are jugglers, magicians in that, like, traditional variety world. And you often, I think, get lumped into those, except you don't actually, like, do a lot of those things.
I'm able to do a lot of those things. So yeah, it's hard. It's even hard for me to describe. When people ask what I do, it's like, well, you know, like I pick different things all the time. So yeah. I started as a kid magician. So when I was a teenager, I did magic. So that was like my first foray into being a performer. And then, so I do magic, but then I was also, people would laugh at me. So I became a comedian. And I learned how to juggle, and then I did sideshow tricks, and I also have a bendy body, so I do contortion stuff. So I'm kind of like a multi-talent, if you will.
Yeah.
But it's hard. It's all based in comedy. So yeah. I try to make, that's the goal of the show, is to make people laugh. And I use all these other means to create silliness on stage.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's hard for me. And you said fitting in a box, and I am a contortionist, so I fit in that. I do literally fit in a box.
Before we started recording, we were talking briefly about how we often do things that we have, like, these ideas, and these, like, we'll, like, be excited about ideas, and then once they, like, get up and running, we're like, oh, I want to do a new idea now. So a lot of people will want to fit into a box of what they, you know, in a description sense.
Sure.
They will just say, like, oh, a comedy juggler, because that's when you go to perform at a cruise ship or something or whatever.
Right.
And even outside of, you know, people like to, when they need a carpenter,
sure,
they like to hire a carpenter,
sure,
not like a guy who has, like, some crazy title. And so it's interesting because I think it's like my greatest flaw, but also my greatest asset is that I'm interested in a lot of different things. And in that's a good thing that I've developed skills and ability to do all these things. And in the flaw side is that people are like, well, he does this and he does this. And so the question to you is, do you think that has been the greatest asset for you, that it is sometimes hard to describe what you do?
I think there's two sides to that. Like when I first graduated from college, I decided I wanted to perform for colleges. I had friends who were doing it. I knew there was an audience that I understood, and I wanted to do things there. So I went originally with my little magic show, and I took a loan from my grandmother, and I didn't know how to get an agent. So I started agenting myself and just self-representing myself. And when I went there, I went as a magician. I was doing card tricks in the booth, and I was basically my kid, my teenage magic birthday party magic show is what I was presenting at colleges. I quickly learned that it couldn't be that, but I also saw that there were so many other magicians in the market, and I was like, I want to separate myself from those guys. So that's when I started trying to really push more of the contortion stuff that I was doing, and maybe some of the other variety things that weren't, I wasn't like, that just showed I wasn't like the other guys. So I think it was an asset in that sense, where I kind of separated myself from those acts. And when people saw what I did, they would say, oh, we want him, not we need a magician.
Yeah, exactly. I was just going to point out that thing of, what if people want you, not the category that you're in?
Yeah. So I it was something that I realized. I don't know if I consciously thought that. I realized that since then, but I was just like, oh, there's a lot of these guys doing card tricks and doing the same things. And I love card tricks, but I kind of don't want to, I don't want to be lumped in with them, really. Yeah. It's like just kind of, I want to create my own thing. So there was a little bit of, it makes it difficult for people to get what I do. But if I would showcase at a conference in front of these college buyers, they saw what I did there. And then, oh, we don't know what that is, but we like it. Yeah. It's funny. And it's, and it'll work for our noontime show in the cafeteria. So, yeah, so I tried to do that, and it kind of, by separating myself and kind of changing from fitting in that magic box, I was able to work different events and kind of spread out my possibilities of things on campus.
Yeah.
Because you've done colleges, so you understand, like, have noontime shows at community colleges. They've got family weekends, which are usually great because the families are there and it's a packed show. And then they have just normal comedy nights where maybe no one knows about it. And but, like, it was nice. I could, my act was appealing to all those different things. So it just gave me more of a chance to perform at the daytime shows, perform at the nighttime comedy shows, but then also doing nicer shows in their theaters on the weekends for Sibs weekend or whatever it might be. So I've just tried to kind of make it into an asset, but it does make it more difficult when you, especially like at a dinner party, like, people, what do you do?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'll sometimes say comedian, and they're like,
right.
Oh,
that's
like
a rough one though. Cause then they're like, well, be funny. What's your best joke?
Yeah. They always come with that. And then, and I'm like, well, it's not really basically I'm a clown is what it turns out to be.
Right.
But if you see all the people here, they're like, hunka, red hair. They think that. And, it's, you know, they're like, okay, we'll see you later. Good luck with that. You know, and they think you're in a circus and all that kind of stuff. So
even juggler like gets a weird thing of that, because it has that people like, oh, so you do kids shows. That's just for some reason there's still that attached thing
totally.
It, which, like, I don't really know any jugglers that do kids shows, like, in my
and magician too, like, they don't can't understand that either. So I sometimes say comedy performer, or just lie and say accountant, because it's just easier. They don't want to find out more about
conversation
that.
Conversation over.
And just move on. I'm always looking for that next thing. I feel like I should just start trying new occupations all the time.
Yeah. If I sometimes want to be, like, serious about it, I'll say live theater performer.
Okay.
And that, like, gets the thing. Like, if somebody's into it, they'll, like, ask more. Like, oh, what is that? Then sometimes that's still too far out of what people understand.
Yeah.
And they'll be like, oh, cool. All right, I don't want to get involved in this. And it's still like, but, like, juggler, magician, like, oh, like, there's a follow-up question that, like, isn't what we want to address. Like, because it's like, show me something, or.
Yeah, right.
And it's like, it's if it's in just, like, we're hanging out with people, it's like not.
Yeah, I'm always worried about lying about it too, because they'll be like, oh, that's interesting. I need an accountant. I have my 1040s here. And they're like, oh, no. Like, I panic.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that just having.
I have my 10-4 now. I'm waiting for you.
Yeah, I pulled up my phone. Oh, no. So I think that just finding that right, it's hard to describe. I'm always working on it. I go by flexible comedy.
Yeah.
And it's funny, if I put that on a business card, like, for a while I was using stunt comedian.
Yeah.
And I would hand people a business card that said Jonathan Byrne, stunt comedian. And people would be like, oh, I didn't know you were a stunt comedian. Like, they thought it was a thing.
Yeah.
It was just some words I put together that kind of made sense.
Yeah.
But it still didn't, you know, like, I wasn't shooting myself out of a cannon or doing anything like that. So it didn't really fit. You know, we're always trying to figure out how to be different and our moniker, I guess.
So I think for people who haven't seen you, we still have no idea what you, after all that, we still have no idea what you do.
Mystery.
And I was thinking about this before you came over in, I think there's a new thing in, not just in variety performers, but in just people in general. Maybe it's a social media thing, or maybe it's just an always thing, that people are performers, or people that are in the public eye, which again now is everyone, like everyone has a personal brand and all that. And there's this over desire to create this cool persona that, like, is perfected and, like, with the perfect outfit, the perfect hair, the perfect, you know, pose in this thing. And if you look at like a screen grab from like any moment in your show, in your performance, you're probably, at any moment, you're probably doing something that isn't particularly like cool.
Sure.
And that's not in a bad thing, like cool in the sense of like, oh, the cool pose or something. Yeah. You're doing crazy stunts and tricks, and or you're in like a, you're twisted around in a thing, like out of context, like what the heck is going on here?
Sure.
And I think that that's so that people listening think that I just like didn't give you a compliment, but it's intended as a compliment in that I think, and this will go into the second piece that we were talking about before, in that like audience experience is should be what matters rather than trying to be like playing it cool. Or, and so again, this is intended to be the highest compliment in that I think you deliver audience experience and let people know that it's okay to be like a little bit goofy and wacky.
Yeah, I think that comes from too just being a weird kid.
Yeah,
like I was just, you know, I was the kid at the wedding who would be like, you know, jumping around the dance floor doing air guitar and like, you know, like everyone's like, oh, look at that kid, you know, like I loved attention. So I'd put my leg over my head and do, you know, armpit farts and knee pit farts.
Yeah.
Is it a knee pit? I don't know. So I think that's just kind of, it's in there, it's in me. And I used to, if I had an audience like anywhere, school or at my friend's house or wedding, I was like, look at me, guys. And now I found the outlet of performing. So that that kind of shifted into there so I can kind of be normalish offstage. But I tried to be the cool guy, like doing magic when I was younger, you know, like doing suave card tricks and being amazing. And I learned how to do like the card manipulations and stuff like that. But every time I performed, people laughed, and it didn't discourage me. It was more just like, oh, okay, that's what they think of me. Like, you kind of learn what people really, really think of you. Like, they thought I was almost parodying, like, of the suave guy.
Yeah.
And I know I'm aware of what I look like, and I can't change that. So I've got this big toothy smile, and I'm long and lanky, and so I just kind of used that and tried to make that into this my stage persona. Like I drove in more into that rather than trying to break away from it.
The praise in that question was for, in that I think there's a lot of people who are trying to chase that. They see somebody else, they see another performer or another person or whatever thing that people are doing. They see this person who is cool, and now like the new definition of cool here in this sense is like somebody who is just owning their what they have and their what their strengths are.
Sure, sure.
And that's cool. That makes people like people and makes people attractive, and somebody that we see that will maybe sometimes try to emulate what they're doing, and it's they just did what they had or were good at or utilizing their body and their shape and their voice and all these things.
Yeah.
And then if we try to like duplicate that, we're like going against all this grain and trying to fit into this thing that isn't us when we have like our own version. So I think that is really valuable. And that was where, to the previous question, when I said, that's where that like praise was coming in of like owning what you have is really great. And that's what I think a big part of what drives you to be able to do what you're doing. And like the things that you've been able to do isn't because you were chasing after trying to create like the cool character. So if there's a question in there, it's when did that, and I think you addressed it earlier, of that you had to decide because you tried to do like the cool card manipulation thing, and then you'd realize that that wasn't quite working. Where did that then happen? Of you could have kept, you could have perfected that cool thing and created a cool character, like again the whatever that word is.
Yeah, I think it's mostly from.
It sounds like I'm like making fun of you for not being
cool. No,
you understand that.
I understand
across that. People at home are probably like, he's just like telling him he's a loser.
I'll see myself out. And, no, I think it just comes from performing a lot too. Like the audience will tell you what is okay and what's not okay. It's almost like the mouse in the lab hitting the feeder bar to get the treat.
Yeah.
I would do something, and if it was goofy, like I'd get the reaction from the audience. But if I tried to play against my type, then I think that's when they were like, "Meh," you know, like they weren't into it. So I think those laughs are very telling of like, okay, that's what they liked about this thing. And I've definitely...
So it's just an awareness thing is... So what I'm getting at is like having something useful for people who are listening of who might be trying to find that voice. And they're either getting on stage or like talking to people, like going to a party and like just not quite fitting in. I think there's a really valuable piece in here of like being aware of the feedback that you're getting, because sometimes we're so blind and like, oh, this is the character that I want to my personality
you're forcing
to
it
be
or whatever. And that's I'm sure I've did that at some point, but then you say if you really listen to what they're into, or like if you for me again, it's the laughs. Like when I get those laughs, like I want more of those, like let's do that. I'm gonna keep doing that thing that gets me the laughs. So I think it's listening to them, and also just being aware of what you like. I know when I started doing magic, I would I'd watch a lot of videos and things, but I would see things that, you know, there's like the Jeff McBrides of the world. That's where I'd learned my card manipulations and stuff like that, and I thought it was fine. It was neat. But then I saw a video from Jay Sankey. I don't know if you know that name or not.
Yeah.
He's a Toronto magician. He was super goofy. And like I just watched his videos because they were funny. I mean, I learned some tricks from him, which is great. And he's a great magician. But he was funny. Like he would just come on screen without a shirt on and he would have a penguin on his shoulder, like this penguin dog toy, and not mention anything about it and do the trick like that. And then he would cut to the next thing and he'd just be in a bicycle helmet and not mention anything about it. So there's just all these like silly notes of it. Like my brother, who liked magic but wasn't really into learning it, we would just watch the videos because they were funny. And it was just like, okay, that's... He's the reason like I kept going with it. I think if I would have found that, it might have been like, oh, I learned a few tricks and I'll, you know, show my friends or whatever.
Yeah.
But I think seeing him, and it just made me laugh. And I was always drawn to comedy as well. So there's a lot of other performers like The Amazing Jonathan or like David Williamson, who I would see as a kid and just be like, these guys are insane. It's great. And I would just emulate them, which was kind of the nice thing about starting. When did you start performing? Like a teenager?
Yeah, kind of. So I had a weird thing that I like knew how to juggle when I was a little kid.
Okay.
But my main interest at the time throughout like middle school, high school, and even into college, I was playing drums in bands.
Okay.
So that was like my performance outlet.
I saw the rock sock.
And then I was my drumming throne right now that I've had since probably middle school, since I had my like got a drum set.
Nice.
And that was my outlet for like performance on stage.
Yeah.
But I was always juggling like for fun.
Sure.
And I didn't start doing juggling variety show performances till I was in college.
Oh, okay. Well, for me, I know I started like I know a lot of guys who start when they're pretty young doing something on stage. But for me, it was nice. Like I could be a 13-year-old kid just copying basically what, you know, these performers that I love were doing. And the audience had no idea I was doing Matt King's act or Jeff Hobson or whoever.
Yeah.
And it was great because it was almost like I kind of equate it now to like learning from the masters. Like when you were a painter with Raphael, like you would copy his masterworks.
Right.
And then you would learn to do your own thing and then you would move on and make your own masterpieces. So I think for me, it was nice. I did that for about 5-6 years where I was just copying these other acts almost verbatim, and I learned how to learn comedy timing and how to do routining and stuff like that. And then when I was about 18, somebody told me, another magician from Canada, Ryan Pilling. I remember him being at a magic convention. He's like, you should have a notebook and just keep down your ideas. I was like, oh, okay. So I just started doing that. Now I have like a whole bookshelf of notebooks of just silly ideas, like from everything from jokes to magic tricks to ideas for franchises or whatever it is. So like there's just notebooks and I keep the ideas. Sometimes I go through them and there's a lot of horrible things in there, but there's some great things that are like, oh, that could be something now. I could turn that into something. And then I think from that point, doing my own notebook also opened the idea like, oh, I should be doing my own things. I should be creating my own stuff and not just copying what these other guys are doing. So yeah. I think that's also the point where I started branching off from just doing what the routines that I loved to like creating my own things and being my own performer and person.
Yeah.
So I was very lucky that I think that I started at such a young age. I could do these things that no one has to see, you know, me doing all of Amazing Jonathan's gags or anything like that.
Yeah.
So, but I learned from those, and I feel like that's also what taught me. Like, I've kind of also found the performers that I liked in that sense, too. Like, I liked these guys who did mix comedy with whatever performance they were doing.
Yeah.
And that was what I was really drawn to. So I think that's, at some point, it was like, okay, this is where I have to go because that's what interests me.
Yeah. Cool.
I don't know if I answered any questions or not.
I don't know if there was a question.
Okay, great. I'm happy to just talk into a microphone.
Yeah, that's
if people listen.
If there is somebody listening who in this moment has been up until now struggling to find that they're everything they've been doing is this uphill thing. So for me, there was this a lot of when I first started, I tried to be bigger because I came from like the music thing where it said it was like the rock and roll world of like, oh, big, like louder.
Yeah, yeah.
Is better. Like playing drums. And
I play the drums too. I don't know if you knew that, but
I feel like I did kind of know that.
I played in like marching band all throughout school and things, but and then I got a drum set a few years ago. Like I got a house that had a basement. I was like, great, I can have a drum set. And we just moved and I haven't had it set up yet, but it's such a great like stress reliever.
Yeah,
now.
You just go for it.
I just put the headphones on, like no one's home, and I'm just like, you know, Foo Fighters, whatever, like and no one has to hear it. And I keep thinking about bringing, I often turn my hobbies into my job. And I have some drumming elements in the show right now, but I'm always like, what if I had a drum? Maybe I should just save this for my, it could just be my outlet, my own thing. And,
yeah.
But it is, yeah, if anyone's looking for like a great stress relief, like putting some headphones on, playing your favorite song and just like rocking out with it is the best. And it doesn't, I mean, I can play okay, but it's more just about like like this animalistic and going crazy that I really love.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool. That's why I always loved drums because it was I can just hit stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like acceptable.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. It's like, oh, that sounds pretty good. Like, oh, yeah. My anger. It's like
railing on these things. So in my personal thing of like, coming from that drumming rock and roll type world, it was like loud, like in your face. That's how you would like create the emotion. And I think I battled that for a while to be that, like, I tried to be like the cool rock guy that, oh, I'm making juggling like hip and modern. And I still want to do that. But I think a lot of times, and somebody actually got Jeff McBride's show in Vegas, his Wonderground show.
Oh, yeah,
there was a person backstage after I got off his stage, and it was like a Cirque du Soleil clown person. So he like really understood audience experience, and he said, stop asking the crowd for so much. Like, they're going to like you or they're not going to like you. You have a job to do to deliver the skill or the art or the performance or the conversation, whatever it is that you're doing. You give that to them. They'll decide what they want to do with it, but don't ask them for applause. Don't ask to take stuff from them. That's not their job. You have a job to give them something that they will experience. So now my job isn't to like be famous or get stuff from them. Like, what we have now is the opportunity to give an experience to our audience, whether that's in a conversation with people at the restaurant or like walking by somebody on the street or if we're on stage.
Right.
And that was really valuable for me in that we can give people things. So the final question to you is a very practical advice that you would give to somebody who is battling that. They're coming up on stage, and I call stage this for people who aren't variety performers. If you just like want to be better at talking to people at a party or going on better dates or something.
Yeah.
A lot of people are putting on this front, trying to create this optimal version of themselves, and it actually comes back to sabotage them because people just want the real you.
Yeah.
So what advice do you have? And it doesn't have to be performance. Again, it doesn't have to be performance related. What advice would you have in 90 seconds to somebody who's finding their voice, finding their personality, and to stop chasing after something that somebody else is somebody else's?
Yeah. 90 seconds. All right. I'm trying and go. I think, and as far as performance, I feel like to figure out who you are is just doing whatever your performance is a lot. And this can probably go for a social thing as well. Like I was, you know, the teenage magician, and I did birthday parties and church events and kind of whoever would watch me. And then I went to college and I did shows on campus. Like I met somebody at my orientation who I did a magic trick for. He like showed me off to his friends, and then eventually I was doing shows on campus. So like the word got out that I did magic and stuff. So that was a whole different audience from my kids show stuff. So I worked on that. And then I was doing okay. Like I was getting booked for stuff and I was working and, you know, I'd do it on the weekends and I would do stuff in the summers, whatever. And then this is gonna be longer than 90 seconds. And I was doing fine. I was doing shows, and people were watching me and having fun. But it wasn't until I started street performing. So we were talking earlier about Baltimore. You're headed there soon. Yeah. I started street performing in Baltimore at the Inner Harbor. And that was the first time I had shows where the audience could leave. Mm. If they didn't like it, they could leave. And it made me realize that my show wasn't that great, which was nice and great and humbling. Like the first time I went out, my then girlfriend, now wife, was with me. She helped me carry stuff to the Inner Harbor Amphitheater. Yeah. She's carrying, you know, speaker stands, and we had all this equipment and stuff like that. And then I got there and I'm like setting up, and there's like homeless guys helping me do my speaker wires without asking, and it was a bad situation. I didn't know, like I was like kind of panicking basically the whole time. So I went out there, you know, we parked, we went set up, got it done, and I went and I struggled for 3 hours trying to build a crowd. I made less money than it cost to pay for parking. I remember that. And we were leaving, and my wife's carrying the speaker stands back to the car, and she's like, "Well, at least we don't have to do that again." And I said, "No, I've got to figure this out." So yeah. I just kept going back and sort of was beaten down every time for a while. Like I remember a few weeks later, I did it again where I struggled to build a crowd for 3 hours and just in the hot sun and no one cared and I wasn't good. And the next act came on, started up a chainsaw to juggle, and 400 people just like jump like right around him, and he did his thing, and I was like, okay, do I get a chainsaw? What do I do? So I kind of just stuck to what I was doing, and I kind of knew that there was something here. I didn't get a chainsaw. I didn't. I may have had some fire in the show or something like that, because I knew that worked. Yeah. But I kind of stuck to my own personality and my interest. I didn't go outside of that too much. Like I had a mannequin that was my prop case. So it was this dress form, actually, that was my grandmother's, and I put juggling clubs in her arms with gloves on the end, and her name was Eileen because it leaned a little bit. So I kind of just stuck to my weirdness and like, yeah. And I just embraced that, and because of that, it set my act apart from all the other acts in the program. And then I started. There's a bunch of festivals that do street performers who noticed that I was different. And then that became an asset. This kind of goes back to what we talked about at the beginning.
Yeah.
So it was like a problem at first because I wasn't able to use what I had to gather people and do things.
Yeah.
But eventually I learned how to embrace that, and it did draw people in. And then it got me invited to all these festivals across Canada and then across the world, really. Like I've been to New Zealand and China and all kinds of stuff just because of this weird act that I've created. And I was different because like there's so many of those festivals that they have comedy jugglers every year, or they have like the guy on the 6-foot unicycle who does like, you know, so yeah. they have like those things that are just kind of the acts that do fit in a box, and they kind of understand what what they are, and but like, oh, we already had that last year, we want something different.
Yeah.
And I was at least that something different that was able to take advantage of that. But also just street performing made me do hundreds and hundreds of shows, and each time there was little minute changes and little tweaks. It wasn't, you know, wasn't all of a sudden, but
yeah,
after years of doing hundreds and hundreds of shows and grinding out, I don't know if you've streamed before much, but you know, it's a struggle. So I think that if there's something that you really want to do, this might be the 90 second clip. if there's something that you really want to do, just, you know, kind of stick to it. And hopefully it will turn into something. I mean, that doesn't always happen. I know there's things that I've worked on really hard that don't come to, like, I really want to speak Spanish, and I've worked on it a bit, and it's still a struggle for me.
Yeah.
But so I think with that, it was something that it was a passion of mine that I knew I had to figure out. And I think that just putting in the hours really, really made me better.
Yeah.
And now I can go out there with more confidence and kind of perform anywhere. And
so
people watch me do stuff.
Since we disregarded our 90 second rule already.
I had no idea. Sorry. I'm not a rule follower.
There was one point in there that I think that is really important to address, in when she said, well, good thing we don't have to do that again. We did this, now it didn't work, now we're not going to do that again.
Yeah.
That is what most people live in, that world of, oh, and try this thing. Oh, it didn't work. So now I'm going to go on, in whatever that is. Like, in, you know, we could think about that in everything. Like, and my big thing is right now is addressing this thing of everything that's ever been accomplished is a direct result of someone having an idea that at the time either didn't exist or was actually impossible to achieve.
Sure.
It's a really interesting thing if you think about, like, everything that exists was impossible before someone dreamt of how to do it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the first time they did it, it was still impossible because it didn't work.
Right.
And that's what is very, like, the most interesting to me right now is most people, 90% of the world that tries something, oh, that was harder than I thought it was going to be and it didn't work, so I'm going to try something else now. Yeah. And then there's some people who say, oh, that didn't work. That was way harder than I thought it was going to be. How do I fix it? Or what tweak can I make tomorrow to make it a little bit better? So how does that, what in you or what inspired you to say, I'm going to do this? Because the easier decision was to say, oh, good thing I don't have to do that again. That
was not fun. Sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It totally wasn't fun. It was hard.
And what was even more less fun was like setting up the next time. You're like, because you know what's about to happen.
Yeah, sure.
So the question is, what is that drive to go through that painful experience to do it again?
I don't quite know. I don't know, because a lot of my life has been like that. Like, I just for some reason, I've been a self-starter in some ways and other ways not.
Yeah.
like self-starter in the sense of like, I don't know how to do this, but I'm just going to start doing it. So I think I saw street performers. I really liked them. So I think in that sense, it was just like, I want to do what they're doing. Like, I want to be part of their club. You know, how do I do that? And this is the way I knew I could make that happen. Mm-hmm. And I also saw friends who were performing internationally and got to travel around the world and do their thing. And I was like, that'd be cool to do. Somebody pay me to go someplace exotic and do things. Great. You know, like, so I think it was a little bit of that. Like, I was maybe jealousy would be, I was like a jealous, like, I want to do those things.
Yeah.
And, and this is my way of being, let me part of you, be part of your crew, guys, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that could have been a little like, man, what about me, guys?
And, right.
So I think it's probably that. I've not really analyzed it too much, but
yeah,
in the moment I'm thinking that.
Yeah.
So I think it's, that was sort of the drive, and I knew this is something that I wanted to do. Like, I had been doing it for a long time, and it was always fun, and I liked the laughter, and I liked the attention.
Yeah.
So I think that any way that I can continue that to happen, my body just was like, let's keep going. Let's do this thing. And I don't know why I didn't buy a chainsaw. Like, that would have been the easy way to do it. I mean, there's lots of guys who do that, and it works. You know, they get the reward of this money at the end, and they can make a living just doing, you know, juggling the chainsaw and stuff.
Yeah.
And I have an art background too, so I don't know if it was that, like, I want to be my own thing, and I want to do my own, and it could be just like the whole, keep your own notebook, create your own stuff. Like, that really stuck with me too and resonated with me. So I find that, that has been a big asset for me. I do a lot of things, obviously, but just being unique and trying to take out anything that is like other people in my show has been really... That's why people want to have me for their event. So I think I keep continuing to try to do that and just to be my own thing. Even if it is hard to describe to Uber drivers on the way to the airport.
Well, that's great. And I think that is a perfect tie-in to the mission of Between Dreams and this show is to inspire people to be themselves. And that the greatest asset that all of us have is that we don't need to fit in a box. Unless you want to literally fit yourself into a box.
Yeah, I wrote down in my notebook recently, embrace your weirdness. That was kind of a big thing for me. That was like, I think that's what I've been doing. It's just like, this is the thing that makes me unique. And and rather than fight against it, just embrace it. And it's who you are, really, even though you might be putting up a front. And So I think that embracing the weirdness probably be my, that could be my 90-second thing. Embrace your weirdness. Edit.
Great. So thank you again for sharing and doing things that are hard for the sake of creating your own character and your own weirdness, embracing that. And I hope people at home listening and watching are inspired to embrace your own weirdness moving forward, whatever it is. You don't need to be on stage to do that. That could be, again, talking to people in interacting with your friends or going on dates or whatever it is that you do.
Can we put that on a t-shirt?
Everything. We're going to put the whole podcast on a t-shirt. Okay. We print the whole thing.
Okay. Wow. It's going to be like a nightgown.
That's why I said try to stick to 90 seconds.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Now it makes sense.
Extra large t-shirts only. All right, that's this episode. Thank you for listening, watching. The show is available on YouTube and on my Facebook page and on iTunes and on Stitcher and on Spotify and on your podcast app and everywhere you listen to podcasts. If you're listening to the audio, you can watch us. And if you're watching us, you can listen on audio and listen in your car and all that. So we're excited to have interesting people like Jonathan Burns come help chat about inspiring you to get out there and do something, because Between Dreams is about finding, we all have these amazing ideas and things that feel impossible because they are, maybe, at just thinking about them, but what's important is taking action, taking the first step and doing something between your dreams. That's it for now. Thank you and goodbye.